Lance Metal, Paul DeTito with you here on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live with you for the next hour. You can give us a call at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Right off the top, we're going to continue our preview of the upcoming opponents for the Giants in the 2017 season. Today, we're going to focus on a division rival, that being the Washington Redskins, and we are now joined on the line by the Redskins radio play-by-play announcer, and that is Larry Michael. Larry, Lance Metal, Paul DeTito with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Pretty good, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing very well, Larry. A lot of changes for the Redskins this offseason, specifically, Larry, in terms of the front office as well as the coaching staff. And I want to start there, but it seems as if the theme, though, has been continuity. Even though they did lose their offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator, they promoted from within, and they did the same thing to help replace Scott McLuhan in the front office. How much was continuity a theme, and how much do you think that's beneficial for the overall organization?
Well, wow, you know, I go all the way back to when Joe Gibbs came here. I got hired here back in Joe's first year, 2004, and when he left after 4 years, he just stressed how important it was to have continuity in all parts of the building to try to keep the program as how he set it up continuing. Now, I think over the last couple of years, what Jay Gruden has done with the program is something everybody has liked. I think they see improvements all over the place. And so, yeah, I mean, continuity really important. The folks that got promoted, a guy like Matt Kavanaugh, certainly capable of being the offensive coordinator. He's had that job in several other locations. And we kind of knew that sooner or later Sean McVay would move on to greener pastures. So, yeah, and Doug Williams is a guy that's been familiar with Jay Gruden and Bruce Allen all the way to back to their days at Tampa Bay together. So, yeah, familiarity, continuity, trying to keep this program going in the direction that it's been in the last couple of years. And I know one thing, last game of the year stuck in everybody's throat last year, so they know they have work to do to avoid that happening again.
Well, you know, Larry, you're talking about guys being the same or at least being familiar. Kirk Cousins is still the quarterback. He gambled on himself. He won. He has put up back-to-back sensational seasons. And I'm going to tell you flat out, I was a doubter. I did not expect Kirk Cousins to do what he's did the last 2 years, but he's been terrific. And I guess I want to ask you, he's betting on himself again, doesn't have the big multi-million dollar long-term deal again, and he's got Terrell Pryor now, new receiver out there. You've got Samaje Perine drafted to compete in the backfield, some new skill positions around him. How do you see this offense kind of shaking out?
Well, you know, he did have a great year last year. He did have a great year the year before, and he doesn't have that long-term deal yet. Those discussions continue, and as we know, you know, come around July 17th, we'll know if, in fact, the long-term deal gets done. Put that aside for a second, and the Redskins did lose some weapons from the offense last year. I mean, Jackson and Garcon, two outstanding receivers. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, they've got a couple guys who have come in, their first-round pick last year. Josh Doctson is healthy. He wasn't healthy for any of last year. I remember going to training camp and he showed up in a boot, really never got on the field for any extended period of time. And Terrell Pryor is brought on board. And what you see when you look at the Redskins offense now is a much bigger unit. And for sure that's going to help them solve one of the problems they had last year with all the yardage that the Redskins put up and all the numbers they put up offensively. A couple of things stop you from winning. You need to score points when you get in the red zone. You need to convert turnovers into points. And the red zone really stuck in the Redskins' craw towards the end of the season. They just were not good in the red zone. And I haven't mentioned Jordan Reed, who elected not to participate in the offseason program. And last week was the mandatory minicamp. And as I was walking out to my car, I saw Jordan walking in for the first time. And he is in, by far in the best shape I've ever seen that guy in. He actually had abs. He actually looked like he had lost a couple pounds. And to see him on the field, as much of a glider as he was at the tight end position, he's lighter, he's even faster, and he's committed after getting a contract extension last year to getting even better. So team's got a lot of offensive weapons, guys, no doubt about it. Getting in the end zone, though, is how you win. You need to score more points than the opposition. And last year, a combination of things, I mean, lack of red zone scoring, and the defense really couldn't hold anybody when they needed to. Mm-hmm. And so that ended up putting a lot of pressure on the offense, and weren't good enough to be able to overcome those factors. So, yeah, I mean, I think the key this year, you got a new play caller this year, too, in Jay Gruden. Jay had been obviously approving of the plays, been part of the process, but with Sean McVay the last couple of years, he's been calling the plays. And so Jay will call the plays this year. How that impacts game management, how that impacts some of the other duties that a head coach has to do. But I think Jay Gruden has learned so much in the job over the last couple of years. I think this is a good progression for him. Get his thoughts into that play calling and got to find a way to score in the red zone. I mean, they tried fades over and over and over last year to the point where Sonny Jurgensen, our Hall of Fame partner, and Jay got into it a little bit after a game where they tried to force four fades. None of them succeeded. And Sonny questioned him on it. And Jay said, well, I'm going to keep throwing them. Well, now they got some players that can catch him.
Yeah.
So we'll see what kind of a difference these new receivers make.
You know, Larry, to me, I look at the Cowboys and the Redskins as both offensively top-heavy. I look at the Eagles as being a little more balanced, and I look at the Giants as being the most balanced, most talented team in the division. That's simply my impression. When you look at the defense that you just talked about, which could not hold in key spots last year, outside of Jonathan Allen, who's immediately, I assume, going to start, none of their other draft picks, to me, look like they're immediate starters. Am I right or wrong there? And how much playing time do you think guys like Moreau may get in the secondary?
Gosh, how much time do we have? I mean, I think you got to look at it back to front. Last year, the Redskins didn't really have a safety that was capable of starting in the league. I mean, you had Whitner, who was picked up late in the game. Might have even been a weekend of the season before he got picked up. They had converted Will Blackman and D'Angelo Hall to safety. And now you've moved Sua Cravens to the strong safety position, his natural position, and you brought in D.J. Swearinger, who is an NFL-caliber safety. So, to me, automatically, that back end is improved. And, of course, Josh Norman, the rest of the corners are there. I'm not so sure Moreau's going to get a lot of play. Zach Brown, acquisition inside linebacker, will compete for one of those starting inside linebacker positions. And the defensive line is completely retooled. Ricky Jean-Francois, gone. Chris Baker, gone. You got a couple of people they picked up. Stacy McGee from the Raiders, Terrell McClain from the Cowboys. Neither were, I would say, glamour players in their previous location,
right.
But they're looking for them to fill roles here. And Jim Tomsula might be the biggest pickup on the coaching staff. We talked about the offensive coaching staff, but he's a hard-nosed, very energetic, very involved defensive line coach. And, of course, he was a former head coach at San Francisco. That didn't go the way they had wanted. And he feels like he's back to where he belongs, where he can teach these guys. He wants to see the players that he cuts start in the National Football League this year. He's taking this offseason very seriously. So they have to improve the defensive line first, up the middle first, stop the run first. I think they have enough athletic ability in the secondary to do a good job. They've got two pretty good corners in Breland and Norman. And I think you guys have seen them on the field and probably know what they can do. But the inside of that defense is really where they need to improve. Just like they had a problem in scoring in red zone territory, they had a hard time stopping people in the red zone. There was a game in Detroit last year. Again, you look at these games, guys, and, you know, one game here and there didn't have to come down to them beating the Giants the final week to get in the playoffs. Gave a game away to Detroit prior to the week we went to London. Score on a Kirk Cousins option play with about a minute to go, and then Detroit marches straight downfield with no timeouts remaining, scores on about a 15-yard touchdown pass to Bolden, and all of a sudden everybody's in a shocked situation of a loss when they thought they had won the game. So it's up to the defense to be stout in those situations. Starts in the middle, got to stop the run first, and I think that's what they've concentrated on.
Talking with Larry Michael, Redskins radio play-by-play voice. I remember two seasons ago, Larry, one of the intriguing names that the Redskins had added was Junior Gallette, who certainly made a name for himself when he was with the Saints. Unfortunately, missed the last two seasons, the torn Achilles tendon. What is his outlook entering this season, and what is his health at this point?
Well, I mean, you know, he has kind of defied the odds. I think no one really expected him to be in the condition and the shape that he is in at this point. He's had to be held back. This guy's got a lot of pent-up frustrations over. Can you imagine having back-to-back Achilles tears and then attempting to come back? I've racked my brain. I can't ever think of a player coming back from those type of injuries back-to-back years. And last year, he had a great offseason. And the week before camp, in a private workout, he blows out his Achilles. So talk about being devastated. But this guy grew up in New York City. He's mm-hmm. got a lot of confidence. He's a dynamic personality, very, very charismatic, and he's healthy. And so you talk about the outside linebacking position. You know what Kerrigan does? Preston Smith, going into his third year, kind of had an up-and-down year last year. You guys mentioned rookies who might impact. Ryan Anderson, second-round pick out of Alabama, looks like an impact player, maybe not a starter quite yet, but I think he'll be in there. Trent Murphy suspended the first four games, so that opens the door for a spot on the roster for Junior Glett. Who would have thought that he'd be in the position to actually make a contribution? But I call him the ace in the hole because right now I think a lot of people wrote him off, and he admits that a lot of people wrote him off, and he's used that as personal motivation to get back, and he looks great. So you got to kind of hold your breath a little bit during camp because he's got to get on the field. I mean, you don't want to see any setbacks for him, especially after those two injuries, but he's beat me out so far.
You know, it's funny, Larry, you mentioned earlier how the last game of the season was obviously the thing that put the stake in the Redskins' heart when the Giants beat them and prevented them from going to the playoffs. Interesting in that the schedule has the Giants and Redskins finishing up the season again this season. How likely is it in your mind that it comes down to a win-and-they're-in scenario once again for the second year in a row?
Well, we all hope that we're sitting there not needing to win that game, right? And then you can maybe rest a couple guys. It's a little different this year. As I look at the Redskins' schedule, yes, last game of the year is against the Giants. The last several years, the Redskins have played the Cowboys, Eagles, and Giants in the month of December, or so it seems. This year, the Redskins have a game in L.A., two at home against Arizona at Denver before wrapping up the season with the Giants. So you'll know, I think, how important that game is midway through November, depending on how these two teams are shaping up. You kind of want it to be that way, don't you? I mean, if you're going to try to either win the division or get into the playoffs, you want to be playing one of your rivals, and you want to see high stakes involved. So I think that you're sitting here now. We're sitting here in June. Yeah, why not make that the biggest game of the year? Yeah, you know, it might be a little nerve-wracking to some of the coaches and those of us who are close to it, but I think that's how you kind of expect it to unfold. I mean, no one's expecting the Giants to be patsies this year, or the Cowboys, or the Eagles. This division has really gotten good over the last couple of years, back to the way it used to be, I think, where all these teams are capable. I think more so with the Cowboys, Giants, and Redskins, Philly still needs, for me, they need to prove what they did last year they can improve on. They certainly have added talent to their roster. But as I like to tell people when I give some speaking engagements, I invite Philly fans to come to Redskins Park and see something they've never seen before. It's called Super Bowl trophies.
Oh, Larry!
Wow, the zingers are out early on this program.
Oh, baby!
And I'm sure the two other franchises would say the same thing.
They certainly could.
I can't say that about you. I can't say that about you guys or the Cowboys, but I sure as heck can say it about the Eagles.
Indeed, but the larger point that you made, Larry, and I agree with you, there's been a great deal of parity, I think, within this division. You got to go back to the early 2000s, the last time that a team actually won consecutive division titles. But in order to win those games that you talked about in December, you need to be able to run the football, especially when the weather gets bad. And I think if there's a common issue between the Redskins and the Giants in 2016, it was the inability to have a consistent running game, especially in the red zone. And that's why both of those teams, they moved the ball, they just couldn't punch it in. So with that being said, the Redskins draft Samaje Perine. They used some other guys in the backfield last year. How do you see this backfield playing out this year for Washington? Is Perine going to be the main workhorse? Do you see it being a three-man back? How do you see that playing out?
Well, I think Perine's going to have to earn it. I think from what Rob Kelly showed last year, and he didn't play the whole year. Matt Jones was the starting back at the start of the year. And Kelly did kind of wear down a little bit at the end of the year. But I think he's viewed as a starting running back by the coach. He said a lot of complimentary things about Rob over the offseason, likes his work ethic, likes his skill set. He's got good hands. He can block. He's a tough runner. Perine's got him beat by about 20 pounds, however. I mean, he's a battering ram. Mm-hmm. He tips the scales at about 230, 235. And so he'll compete. I think he's got to earn playing time. And then Chris Thompson is the third down back. They really like what he does on third down. You know, he caught over 40 balls. I think he rushed for over 450 yards last year. For a third down back, he was outstanding last year, and they look for him to take a step up this year. And then Mac Brown, another guy who came out of nowhere last year, and he is really competing now too. So Matt Jones, kind of the forgotten guy right now, started the year last year as a starter, and he's looking for a way out, I believe, right now, because the table is set with these other guys in front of them. You never know, though. We know how injuries happen. We know how things turn out in the NFL. Nothing is ever a given. But I think you're looking at Rob Kelly at this point being the number one man, P. Ryan needing to prove he deserves reps, and Chris Thompson is the third down back. I think they're in better shape than they were last year in the running back position because Kelly's got a year under his belt. He holds on to the ball, too. He's very, very he possesses the ball, doesn't fumble. And I think they need to improve their running game. If you look at their average per carry, it wasn't where you need it to be. You need to be over four for sure. And if you can get kind of, 4.2, 4.3, that opens up your playbook. They were under 4 yards a carry last year. So that's a point of improvement they have to take care of this season.
Larry, I'm going to let you say one thing before you go, and I'm going to say this to you now. By the time we see you in the press box in November, Samaje Perine is going to be your dominant running back. I promise you that. That kid can play.
You know,
he is a force. He has a bowling ball. You're going to love him.
Well, he had some 400-yard game, right, last year. Or was it the year before?
He can play, and he's got a great attitude. And I was dying for the Giants to get him, and I was very disappointed that he landed in Washington.
I'll remember that, and we'll talk to you in November.
We will.
We'll
I promise
see.
You.
I hope so.
Hi, Larry.
Larry, appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, that was Larry Michael, the Redskins radio play-by-play announcer, giving us the layout of the land for the Washington Redskins. They made a number of changes specifically to their coaching staff. Greg Minuski is now their defensive coordinator. He was their linebackers coach last year. He's replacing Joe Barry, who they parted ways with. And then Matt Cavanaugh, who was the quarterback's coach last year, is now going to be the offensive coordinator, replacing Sean McVay, who's now the head coach for the Rams. So they have some new personnel and new spots, but I don't know how much that's going to change scheme given the fact that they promoted from within.
I don't think so. And I said this yesterday when we had the Eagles representative on. We had Sal Pal on to talk about Philadelphia. John and I did. And as I said to Larry, I think that Dallas and Washington are clearly more top-heavy offensively. Their defenses are both not where you want them to be, but they certainly have potent and dangerous offenses. These are two teams that if they're going to win the required double digits to secure the division, they're going to have to outscore people. That's just the way I see it. I just don't think they can lock down games with their defense. I think Philly's got the potential to, even though their corners are terrible and their linebackers are mediocre. We all know that if they can get that pass rush going, and Sal Powell was saying they got to blitz more to do that. But they certainly have a very dangerous offense. Creates matchup problems for you all over the field. And Carson Wentz is only going to get better. And obviously we know what the Giants have offensively. If the offensive line just does good enough. And their defense, unquestionably, one of the best in the league. So to me, I'm still believing that the Redskins are the toughest team for the Giants to edge out for the NFC East. And it just so happens they play them twice in the final 6 weeks of the season. Okay? So the second half of that schedule, I think they're going to be facing the team they're going to have to fight with the hardest to win the division, including the final game of the year like they did last year when, of course, the Redskins needed the win. The Giants didn't. And Ben McAdoo went down there and said, we're going to kick their butts. We're going to win this game. And no letting up. We want this game. They beat us earlier this year. We want the game. And they want it.
And both affairs were close because that game, remember, at MetLife Stadium earlier in the season was another one of those nail-biters that came down to the wire. Turnovers was a big issue. I mean, I would agree with you. I think all four of these offenses are dangerous. I think all four of these teams have plenty of weapons. I think we've broken it down on many different occasions on this program. Defense is clearly going to separate the men from the boys in this division. But here's the wild card, Paul, and it's not necessarily a stat that you can predict. What changes the outlook for defenses, and we've seen this all the time, if you become an opportunist opportunistic defense,
turnovers,
you were able to patch up some of those other issues and shortcomings. And there was a year where Dallas was up there number two in the NFL in takeaways, and then what happened the next season, they went down to 32nd in the NFL. So that's what, to me, can all of a sudden fluctuate. And then a defense you're looking at on paper right now, and you're like, you know, they got weaknesses in the middle. Their safeties are suspect. All of a sudden, they could lead the NFL in takeaways, and that changes things.
Well, the biggest thing you can do, and I know people say that turnovers are in a lot of ways a product of luck, and in some ways they just come in streaks, and you can't really predict
Patches.
Them. I get that. So many people will say that. Other people, like Tom Coughlin, will say, no, you put yourself in those positions, and luck is the byproduct of hard work. And I understand that, too. Here's what I say. I say, the best opportunities you have to create turnovers are probably not going to be necessarily forced fumbles, but the number that can really fluctuate is the interceptions. And yeah, sometimes you're facing quarterbacks who throw the ball poorly. Sometimes receivers just tip the ball up and it gets picked. But here's what I'm telling you. The one factor in the turnover number that you can actually affect is pressure on the quarterback that can force an erratic throw.
Yeah.
That's the one part of the turnover number that you can, as a defense, actually impact. So if you've got the pass rush, you've certainly, in my mind, have a better mathematical chance just by the fact that there'll be some more erratic throws in the secondary to cause and create turnovers. I don't see Dallas or the Redskins having the pass rush that the Giants or the Eagles have.
Well, the Redskins, the way this defense is structured, Paul, they have to rely on their linebackers to bring the pressure. Kerrigan and some of the other linebackers.
Well, we think Allen's probably going to be able to do some of that,
too. But that's why the reason I brought up Junior Gallet, and he's still an extreme wild card because you just don't know whether or not he's going to be durable. But that's somebody that if he could stay healthy, even if he's a situational pass rusher, you know, that's somebody that they didn't have in the mix last year.
I agree.
So little guys like that can all of a sudden help because, once again, you weren't banking on that production, mm-hmm. and then it's sort of the icing on the cake. That's why I think he's a player to watch if he can hold up, if he can stay healthy. But, yeah, their front group, I mean, if you look at their defense, it's a 3-4 defense. Their defense over the last few years, they weren't getting a lot of pressure from their front three.
No.
If anything, they were hoping those guys would help just stop the run, essentially.
What really happened to the Redskins is that they relied so heavily on Kerrigan.
Yeah.
That teams started to load up on him, and they basically said, okay, we're not going to let him be the guy that gets to our quarterback that ruins our game plan. And you know what? When Kerrigan started to become the focus of the other team's offense, his overall effectiveness started to drop. He's still a very good player and a very dangerous player, and that's why, you know, I think Allen on that defensive line is going to help him a lot. But Kerrigan was more dangerous in spurts than he was consistently over the last couple of years. You know, his sack numbers are certainly nothing to write home about, but I think anybody would tell you who plays this game, Kerrigan can be a dangerous force on any given Sunday.
Well, you have to account for him.
You do.
And that's, you want guys on the field that you have to account for, that the opposition needs to say, hey, should we bring an extra offensive lineman or running back over to help alleviate the pressure that
we
may see?
We're going to keep that tight end in the chip.
Yeah, that's what you want in terms of a defensive approach. And we'll continue to talk about the Redskins, the division overall, moving forward here on the program, but we also want to give you an opportunity to weigh in. So we're going to open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We've got Christian on Long Island on the line. Christian, what's happening?
Appointment. Check out new specials.
All right, apparently Christian is listening to another program right now, so we'll pass on him. How about another Christian? We go from Christian on Long Island to Christian in New York.
Bro, I wanted to hear this week's specials.
We'll have to pass on that for the time being. Christian is in New York. Christian, what's happening?
Hello.
Hey, guys.
How we doing?
I wanted to talk about how in Week 17 against the Redskins, I noticed that Odell had such an improvement with his composure when going up against Josh Norman. He really just seemed like he played the cards right in that game. And looking at all the highlights and everything, it's all Norman getting in his face and him not – really getting back in his face at all, and I'd really like to hope that that's him actually learning from the past matchups, because, you know, even in the Week 3 matchup, he was pretty hot-headed, just like the Carolina game. And I'm really just hoping that that's a sign of growth from him to, you know, just stay cool and just beat him with his ability, because when he stays cool, there's no chance for Norman to even keep up.
Well, let me just say this to you, okay? As far as I'm concerned, and you'll notice we did not address that hype story of Josh Norman and Odell Beckham with Larry Michaels. Not necessary. I think it's overplayed. I think Odell Beckham has proven he is the better player and can basically, you know, take care of business. Josh Norman is not physically capable, in my mind, of shutting him down. He's got to get in his head to compete and to have any chance of winning that matchup. Now, Odell had over 100 yards in the first game against the Redskins last year, and in the second game, when his numbers were down, the Giants didn't need him to win. They went elsewhere and knocked the Redskins from being in the playoffs. So I think you could say Odell maybe not individually won that game, but that wasn't the idea. The game plan was not for Odell to beat Norman. It was just to beat the Redskins, and so they didn't need him to do it. I will tell you this, okay? To me, Josh Norman is a very good corner. I'll give him that. He's good to very good, but he is not capable of winning a one-on-one matchup on Sunday against Odell Beckham Jr., period. That's it.
Well, no, and Odell didn't play the second half of that.
Yeah,
correct. He didn't have to.
And that's another reason why, Christian, I don't think he can read into the results of that game, given the fact that the Giants had nothing to play for. It was really all the Redskins, and I think that part of the philosophy was the defense did a lot of the heavy lifting, shut down Kirk Cousins in the offense. They weren't able to move the football, and that's not to say that Odell Beckham hasn't shown growth and maturity. It's just that's not the game that I would utilize to say that.
Well,
we're moving forward and all of this is done. Here,
no, I think you do, because the Giants knew, as was not the case in many other games, they did not need to focus on Odell Beckham to win. They
right.
didn't need to.
Well, as long as, though, mentally they stayed focused, too, they didn't want to give any gifts to the Redskins, too, which
was unnecessary. So that's why Beckham does not put up big numbers in that game. That's why he's hardly used in that game, hardly targeted, gets fewer snaps.
As
it wasn't necessary. Why bother? And besides, Odell's already proven that he can beat Josh Norman anyway. So what's there to prove by focusing on him?
Well, but I don't think
pointless.
The question wasn't so much. I mean, Odell Beckham has had good quality production against most corners in the NFL. I don't think he needs to move forward in that department. I think it's more of a fact that are we beyond the Norman Beckham?
I'm beyond it.
Off
I'm done
field,
with it.
On the field.
I'm done with it.
Non X's and O's stuff.
I'm
no,
done
I'm
with it.
I'm done with it too. Talking about it, breaking it down. The question is more though: are the players done with it, and is it ever going to come up again? And I don't know if we're at that stage because it's still a very small sample size. Remember, it's not like they've gone head to head about 10 times over the course of their career. Let's not forget about that.
I'll tell you what. Maybe it becomes a discussion again if Josh Norman actually defends a pass intended for Odell Beckham, which, by the way, he doesn't do. He doesn't intercept passes intended for Beckham. He doesn't knock balls down intended for Beckham. That's what corners do when they win matchups against opposing wide receivers. They get their hands on the ball, they knock it away, or they pick it off. They don't contain them and hold them to 5 catches for 50 yards or whatever the number may be. Because, you know, the only incompletions that Beckham gets when Norman is defending him are either poorly thrown balls, okay, or drops. Norman never knocks balls away from Beckham. If you notice, go back and watch the tape. Norman never is in position to knock a ball away from Odell Beckham Jr. That's all you need to know.
That too. And
that's all you need to know.
Excited about for this year is that we don't need Odell to catch 5-yard passes anymore. I mean, his catches are just going to start being very significant. So I could totally see him catching less balls this year, but for more touchdowns.
Well, I think a lot of that depends on, you know, who they choose to target in different scenarios across the field. I mean, you have Brandon Marshall. You didn't have him last season. Sterling Shepard had a promising rookie year. Maybe he has a little bit more of an opportunity. The tight end, I think, is a position to watch this season. And then you hope that the running game also is going to be utilized a little bit more, especially in the red zone. So, I mean, you combine all of those factors, Christian. Yeah, if everybody is successful around Odell Beckham, I could certainly see his numbers going down slightly. I don't
sure.
think that's a stretch at all. The other thing,
well, the catches, yeah.
Well, I mean, anything, though. I mean, even the yardage, even the other opportunities within the red zone, I mean, they could go down. And it could go down and the Giants could still be productive. In an ideal world, that's what you'd like to see happen, meaning other players are doing some of the heavy lifting, they're running the football, and Beckham's still productive. He's just not necessarily maybe taking up as much of a percentage of the offense as he did last year. Mike Sullivan, the offensive coordinator, when he met with the media last week, one of the questions that was posed to him was, you know, Beckham was responsible for, I think, about 33% of the offense last year.
160-something targets.
Yeah.
Ridiculous number.
So Mike was asked, do you think that you're going to try to get others more involved so that you're not putting 33% of the offense? And Mike Sullivan's answer was, in an ideal world, we'd love to get everybody involved, but a lot of it has to do with the defensive attention, where Eli Manning's going with the football. But the point is, if he goes and makes up 20% of the offense next year, the Giants could still very well win, assuming Marshall, Shepard, and some of the other weapons are making up for that other 13% that Beckham's not getting anymore. That's the key.
Right, and I just get nervous when I see Odell catching those five-yard passes over the middle. I mean, he's way too valuable of a guy to be doing that. And so, you know, obviously Marshall's the better guy for that now.
Mm-hmm.
And I just imagine Odell, when he catches a ball now, it's for, you know, significant yardage. It's for more touchdowns than last year. Even though he might catch like 60 to 80 balls, but he should be able to get his normal 12 to 13 touchdowns.
Well, but here's the thing, Christian. See, Beckham is so dangerous off those short passes. I mean, think about how many touchdowns he got a short pass, and then all of a sudden he ran another 60 yards for the touchdown. So, I mean, this is just my personal opinion. I'm not for taking a wide receiver and saying he's so valuable, we don't want to put him in a position where he could get hurt, so we're not going to throw these passes to him anymore. Then all of a sudden you become predictable to the opposing defense. And I think a big part of Beckham's game is getting him out in open space off short passes and then letting him do the work down the field. So I personally don't think that it's valuable if you'd eliminate that facet of his game.
Understand this. If Ingram is going to be the kind of guy who's going to break a two-deep zone, okay, which is what supposedly his one of his key assets is going to be, and he is going to run safeties backwards down the middle of the field, well, guess what? That opens up the slant for Odell even more than it did last year. So I appreciate your thought that maybe you don't want him catching a lot of those short slants because you think he's going to get crunched. But what I'm telling you is there should be more room for him to operate on those slants than there ever has been before. And to be honest, they may be better off throwing those passes to him because he's going to have a lot of yak yardage.
And appreciate the phone call, Christian. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's hear from the other Christian. Looks like we got him back. He's in Long Island. Christian, what's happening?
Hey, Lance and Paul, how you guys doing today?
All right. How was that sale?
I'm sorry. All right, so I have three questions, two and a hypothetical. One, the first one is, any update on the offensive line injuries and the injuries to other players in minicamp?
Well, the players are on break now, so I mean,
for 6 weeks.
Yeah, we're not going to hear anything until they return for the start of training camp. Justin Pugh did speak to the media. He mentioned he had some back tightness. He didn't think it was going to be anything concerning. He'd be ready to go for the start of training camp. I believe Ben McAdoo did not have an update on DJ Fluker, and even Mike Sullivan didn't necessarily have an update in terms of maybe what he had been dealing with. And then
he was out at the last practice, though. Fluker was out there
right on
the field on the sideline. He was doing the stationary bike and stuff, and we never got confirmation as to what it was. But the fact that, again, we talk about this all the time, when a guy's at least out there on the field, it's a good sign in that if he's really bad, he's inside the trainer's room. They don't even let him step foot outside the building.
Well, and this is also the time of the year, remember, where they're going to be very precautious in terms of what they're going to do with the players, and they're not going to throw them out there, even if they're dealing with soreness, which may be the case with some of the players. But the short, sweet answer, Christian, is the fact that you're not going to hear any definitive answers until training camp.
I would say this. I did not get the impression from anything that was said during day three of the mini camp that any of these injuries would be lingering long-term into training camp when they come back on July 27th. The only one that I think that might could be JT Thomas, who's done a tremendous amount of work on the side doing his rehab, but I have not gotten any indication that they expect him to be ready for July 27th. And that is strictly a guess based on the type of information we've seen and heard. I can't say that for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if he does not start minicamp. And Geno Smith, I guess, on the other side, has been surprising in that he did a lot more running around during the minicamp than most people expected that he would. And he claims he will be ready for the start of minicamp coming off his knee. And Thomas also, by the way, was a knee, in case we neglected to say that.
Okay. Percentage-wise, how much do you see Red Ellison playing next to Flowers and Hart? And then I got one more question after that. I'm done.
Percentage-wise, oh, my goodness. I think they're going to go situational with the tight ends. And I think that will depend on how many seconds and thirds and longs do you have. You know, and I think that dictates how much Ellison's on the field, because clearly he is the opposite of what Engram is. Engram is more the receiver. Ellison's more of the blocker. So, you know, how does the game play out? What kind of situations are you faced with? That's going to determine who gets more snaps at tight end. I don't think you can predict that right now.
Plus, you can't rule out Ellison being utilized as a fullback, too.
Right.
And that's something to watch.
All right. And with Phil Jackson taking calls on Porzingis, but only willing to do it for a King's ransom, hypothetically, do you think Jerry Reese would ever take a call regarding ODB?
Well, you know.
Ever? You never say never.
Yeah, I mean, any GM, you know, and I understand fans get nervous when they hear about notable players being shopped around, and who knows how much substance there is behind those Porzingis rumors that you alluded to, Christian, but I think any GM will tell you, you can never say that you're not open to taking any phone call, because then you're not doing your job.
Yeah, you have to answer the phone when it rings.
You have to talk. You have to listen. I mean, what happens if a team is willing to give you, I mean, a boatload of draft picks or something that you never even saw coming? You got to listen. Doesn't mean you're going to trade the guy, but there's no harm in listening.
Let's put it this way. You think when the Vikings in Dallas started talking about Herschel Walker, do you think that in all honesty – anybody thought that trade was going to happen, and then suddenly the Cowboys realized that they're going to get basically three drafts worth of picks to rebuild an entire franchise? I mean, really? How could Jerry Johnson,
Jerry Jones,
and Johnson turn that down? They couldn't do it. I mean, you just never know.
Yeah, I mean, you got to listen.
But
I don't think
I'd be surprised if he was traded. Let's put it that way.
All right, thanks, guys, and hope you have a good one.
Thank you.
All right, Chris, appreciate the phone call.
I saw, an ESPN documentary, 30 for 30, on that trade, and Jimmy Johnson was like, are you kidding me? You know, they basically gave us a franchise.
Yeah, they turned around their franchise. I mean,
they got like 11 picks or something. It was ridiculous.
Crazy who they went
plus,
with.
Like,
that
a bunch of players
phenomenal.
Who, yeah. It was funny, Jimmy Johnson said in the show that when the deal first came out and they were talking about the deal and the Vikings were talking about, well, you can have this choice of these players and stuff. And what Johnson did was he bluffed them by saying, okay, I tell you what, we won't take this guy and this guy and this guy. We'll take these other guys instead, but you give us some more draft picks. And the truth is, he never wanted any of the Vikings players.
No,
he just wanted the picks.
To sweeten the pot, because if you have lesser caliber players, the veterans,
right.
You get better draft picks.
And he was only interested in getting the picks. He's like, we were taking guys we knew we were going to cut anyway.
Yeah, they were just throwing. Yeah.
Fleeced the Vikings in the most lopsided trade in NFL history.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how one draft really set forth with that dynasty that they built
well,
in the early
90s. It was more than that, because they got like three drafts worth of picks.
But what I'm saying is that one acquisition.
That one acquisition.
That really turned the corner. And sometimes you see that in sports.
Boy,
not just the
you
NFL.
Really need to catch lightning in a bottle, though, to get a GM that's willing to give you that much for a player.
Well, and the reason why you don't see that a lot in the NFL is because the injury rate is so high. Would you really be willing to sacrifice so much of your future draft for one player? And then if that player gets hurt, what are you left with?
To be honest,
yeah,
Ditka did it for Ricky Williams.
Well, but notice how all those trades, though, that you're mentioning.
That didn't work out.
No, it didn't. But notice how all those trades you're mentioning are pretty much ones that happened in the past. Now, granted, people are going to bring up, well, look at the RG3 trade, but here, you know what? The crazy thing about the RG3 trade is, if you go back and you look at all of the players that the Rams wound up taking, look who's left. There's two players left.
I know.
It's almost like we jump the gun when we evaluate trades, Paul. Sometimes we do it too soon. You have to.
We all do it too soon.
You got to let like a 5 or 6
rush
window come
to judgment.
Out. Here's the thing. The crazy part about it is one of the best players involved in that trade may go down as Janoris Jenkins, who's now actually wearing a Giants uniform.
I didn't even think about that.
Think about that. No, because I was actually, and I tweeted this out a few days ago when I was looking back, but Jenkins was one of those picks. And
now
he's actually a Giant. When it's all said and done, I mean, you still got to give it a few more years. I understand people like to make bold declarations, but when it's all said and done, one of the best players in that draft class for the Rams may turn out to be a guy wearing a Giants uniform.
Wow. Didn't even think of that. Yeah. Good. That's a good one by you.
I mean, that's why. It's fascinating to me. I was looking it over the other day. I mean, half of those players that the Rams wound up drafting are no longer in the NFL. Now, part of it is a variety of different reasons, off the field, on the field issues, but they only have two players right now, the Rams, on the roster from that huge RG3 trade. So when you go back and look, I think it changes the outlook of how people are going to evaluate that trade. Let's head back to the Lions. Adam is in Maryland. Adam, what's happening? How we doing, Adam?
Hello?
Adam, apparently a man.
Hey.
There he is.
How we doing, Adam?
Hey, guys.
How we doing? What do you got?
I'm doing good. I had a question about the offensive line. You guys mentioned the jumbo package, I think, yesterday or the day before. And I was just wondering how – I know they used it last year a couple of times where they put Newhouse out on the edge, and then the next play they would have to take him off because he was eligible.
Right.
I was wondering if, like, let's say Fluker didn't win over the starting right tackle, right guard job, but they put him out there in the jumbo package.
I could see it.
Would they be able to put him inside the tackle, though?
Sure you could. Like, but what you do is he would line up, let's say, between, you would think, between Jerry and Hart, although they could line him up between
right.
Richburg and Jerry, and Hart still becomes the guy on the edge. You could do that.
But would you have to take Hart off on the next play, or would you still be able to take Fluker off?
I'm not sure how you would have to report that to the official. I'm going to be clear with you. I'm not sure how you'd have to report it. But in terms of, you know, where you're going to line guys up, I'm pretty sure you can line any of them up. As long as you identify with the official, I'm pretty sure you can line the combination up any way you want when you go to a jumbo six-man line.
Yeah, it's
okay,
just
it's
a matter
all depending
of
on who's on the line.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's the exact thing, but remember that whole Baltimore-New England issue in the postseason
right.
had to do with guys coming in and not reporting to the official what they were going to line up as
right.
and who was eligible receivers and so forth. So that they clarified where as long as you come in and you report to the official, I really don't think that that necessarily limits you in terms of where you can line up.
I mean, I have not checked into this yet
yeah.
because let's just say Fluker does come in. Well, maybe Bobby Hart then just has to tell the official, I'm lining up as a tight end.
Yeah.
So maybe Fluker doesn't do the reporting. Maybe Hart's got to do the reporting. I'm sure there is a logistical deal that can be done. The point is you can get all six linemen on the field. And honestly, in a short yardage situation, I implore them to get Fluker out there on the field if he's not one of the starting five.
I'm definitely with you on that. Anyway, thanks, guys.
You got it. Appreciate
okay.
the phone call, Adam. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Of course, the good news is with Ellison at 265 pounds, you know, as a pseudo lineman, you know, maybe they don't even need to do that. I still would like to see it, but if Ellison proves that he could do the job as just staying home as the, what, 5.5? Offensive lineman, maybe that gets it done.
Well, it's not unusual for six offensive linemen
it's
to be
not.
On the field. That's
it's not.
Not anything new. I mean, I'll give you the perfect example.
If you don't need to do it, you don't do it because
no.
it does lessen your playbook.
Correct, but I will go back to, and I don't know if there were exactly six offensive linemen on the field. I'd have to double-check this, but when Donald Penn, who is with the Raiders and he was with Tampa Bay,
yeah,
and they've even used it with Oakland, Donald Penn would line up, and then he'd be eligible as a receiver
yes.
in red zone packages. You could go and watch the videos on YouTube. And they would run him out, and he'd catch touchdown passes. He's an offensive lineman, but they'd utilize him as a sort of pseudo tight end.
Let me see how many targets he's had.
Yeah, Penn, I believe, has caught two touchdowns in his career, maybe even three. But Donald Penn, if you look in his stats, he definitely has been targeted a few times, and it's
he's
all
got,
been pretty much red zone stuff.
He's got seven targets,
okay.
six catches, and four touchdowns.
Four touchdowns is even more than I anticipated. There you go. They've done it. I mean, and a variety of teams that he's played for.
Richie Seibert, when he was here, was begging.
For them to
begging
run a play like
for
that.
Them. Remember, when he first – now, he was a guard, but when he first got here, okay, and he was working his way into the roster and into the lineup, he was begging for them to use him as an extra tight end because he wanted to catch a touchdown pass.
Well, you know. Offensive linemen know. Probably the last time some offensive lineman in the NFL caught passes, probably high school.
There's a good reason they didn't throw it to him.
I understand. Yes. even though they're ambitious and
they're
excited.
Love you, Richie, but yeah, not a great idea.
You have to know the limitations of your own players, as I always say. Let's head back to the phone lines. We check in with Chris in New York. Chris, what's happening? How are we doing, Chris?
Hello?
Yes.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Hi.
What do you got for us?
I wanted to ask, well, one, I wanted to ask a question about, I think I'm going to go ahead and say Dick Lane was the first person I saw outside of quarterback that wore the number jersey under 20. I mean, under 10, like quarterbacks wear. I wanted to ask you guys how you feel about the fact that receivers are now wearing low numbers. I mean, I'm used to the traditional 80s for receivers. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, as my opinion, I always say I don't care what jersey you wear. I don't care what number you wear. I don't care how it looks, as long as you're productive at the end of the day. I mean, Paul and I have had some disputes at the lunchroom table about jerseys, so we'll save that for off the air. But that is the least important thing, in my opinion. Anything having to do with the jersey from an optic standpoint is minutiae as far as I'm concerned. It has impact on the game.
I meant in like a fan base type of way, not like performance-wise.
Look, and I will tell you, to me, and I may be remiss, but I think the most well-known single-digit receiver in the last 40 years in New York was Eddie Bell of the Jets, who wore number 7. And that's when they were playing back at Shea Stadium. But here's what I think about the uniforms, and I'm going to make this short and sweet. I'm so done, absolutely done, with the newfangled designs to where you can't read the numbers when you're high atop in the press box or you're in the third deck of the stadium. And the fans in the building can't even read the numbers because all the newfangled designs won't let you differentiate a 3 from an 8 or a 6 from an 8. That's what ticks me off, okay? Because the numbers are on the jerseys for a reason. They're there to identify the players. They're there so the fans can figure out who's doing what and so the announcers can figure it out so they can tell the fans at home. Okay? That's all I want to talk about in terms of jerseys. Make the numbers easy to read so that everybody who needs to know who the players are can know who the players are. I can't tell you how angry I get as a guy who does play-by-play in college football when I'm not allowed to read the numbers because some crazy designer decided he wanted to get funky with the numbers.
Well, and what I will add to that is, I mean, this relates to the point that you brought up, Chris, is the fact that even if some wide receivers are going to have lower numbers, it would be ideal, and this is also coming from a play-by-play standpoint, and even for the fans, you'd like to at least know this position player is usually in this ballpark of a number, so it's easy to identify not just who the player is, but also what position they play. So that I can see the usefulness of having it within that same number region. And that I get, which is, I think, pretty much what you were bringing up.
Yeah, and like you know, new players that come in, I see the numbers and I'm like, wait, is that a corner or, you know what I mean? I don't know who they are yet. That was just one of the things I was asking.
Well,
like,
the reason many years ago,
side of things.
Many years ago, the league put in the restrictions as to what your range of numbers could be by position. And the reason that was done, was because I think, if I'm not mistaken, they wanted to make it easier for the officials to identify because teams were coming up with all of these sub packages and these crazy gadget plays. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, somebody could correct me on this and I'd be more than happy to yield. I think they wanted to make it easier for the officials to understand and recognize guys who were supposed to be doing certain things on the field.
Well, I'm bringing up the NFL rules that our producer Dave was kind enough to find. In terms of wide receivers, 80 to 89 is for wide receivers and tight ends. And then the wide receivers also get thrown into that 10 through 19 period.
That was an adjustment.
Correct.
The original numbers, they were not allowed to have those singles, the teens.
When they made the adjustment by throwing the wide receivers in, they also threw them in with guys who are going to be quarterbacks, kickers, and punters. So that's why you now see all four of those positions in that region of the 10 through 19.
Okay. And by the way, no receiver is allowed, according to the current rules, to be in the single digits.
Yeah. They could probably – I mean, I don't know. I wonder, though, can you wear it in the preseason and then once you make the team, you can make the change? I wonder if you're allowed to do it in the preseason because I've seen, Paul, sometimes guys wear numbers. Yeah, they wear numbers out of position in the preseason and then they change
Victor Cruz was six, wasn't he?
I think you may be correct.
In the preseason?
Yeah, I definitely saw that one. Yeah.
So these are the regular season type of
three.
He was three?
Was he three?
Okay. So he was three in the preseason.
I doubled it up.
And then
thank you, Dave.
Once the regular season comes in, you got to make the change. That's why.
Yeah.
And by
we
the way,
90 players when you open camp.
Of course. So you have some flexibility in that degree. Yeah, but that's a big reason. What I think is related to this is if you remember, Roger Lewis was 82 last season. He made the change to 18, and I'm sure a lot of people are like, well, wait a minute. How is he out of the 80s? Well, the reason why he's allowed to do it for 18 is if you're 10 through 19, you're still allowed to be a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I was asking on the fan side of things, like, you know, to just to make sure you know who is who. You know, I thought it was crazy that all these – I mean, I know DeSean Jackson had 10 for the longest time, but, you know, that's how I knew him. You know what I mean? But then
he can't go lower than that, though.
Yeah.
And then, you know, our receivers started, you know, besides – I mean, of course, Beckham, he was, you know, the first one that I saw with the 13 on the Giants. And then now we have everybody. I mean, I think Sterling Shepard's the only one still in the 80s, right, since we lost Cruz?
Let's see. In terms of the roster right now?
Right now.
Numbers in the
80s? Receivers, I mean.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you're talking about. You've got Sterling Shepard's 87. Other than that, Darius Powell's 86.
Okay.
Kevin Snead's 84. Kevin Norwood. I mean, remember, the roster's expanding.
Yeah,
right
now.
Most of the new guys are within the 80s. But in terms of guys that you know are definitively going to make the 53, Shepard's the only one in that category. That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, besides that, unless you have something else.
No, real quick, we'll let you get another question. What do you got?
Okay. I wanted to ask you guys, how many spots do you truly believe are available? I mean, like, I was counting on, you know, the current roster that we have, and I counted about, like, 42 to 45 people that are definitely going to make a roster. How many spots do you think are available?
You're talking about across the board? Wow. Well, we'll let you go, and we'll answer that off the air for you, Chris. Overall, in terms of the percentage of this roster out of the 53, I think that's very difficult to answer at this point.
Yeah, it really is, because injuries during training camp can throw an entire monkey wrench into that thing.
I mean, well, what I was going to throw out is, you know, I'm thinking they're going to keep six wide receivers. So I could see five and six being open. I could see it being a battle there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's two right there. As far as tight end is concerned, I could see probably maybe the third or the fourth tight end open in terms of battle. So there's two right there. That's four. You know, the running backs, you can argue that fourth running back.
Who's going to be the ninth offensive lineman?
So we're up to at least five or six guys right
you know,
there.
Who's the last linebacker if they keep six, which you think they probably will?
I mean, is it a stretch, Paul, to say, and this is just me looking at it now.
Go back into the corners.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about, I think it's fair to say about 15, 17 guys.
I'll sit down and think about that. I really haven't done that to this point.
Neither have I, but I think just doing the math in my head, it's fair to say that, you know, you're looking at 15 to 17 spots, I think, that are true battles at this point, where I don't think anybody should feel comfortable on the back end at various spots.
I mean, there's a lot of competition.
Yeah.
It's a very good thing. Most of the competition is for backup spots, and that's how you know if you have a good team.
Absolutely. I just want to get one tweet in here before we wrap up. AJ Marshall at AJMarshall3. How does undrafted free agent tight end Colin Thompson out of Temple look during mandatory and OTAs? Haven't heard his name much. And he actually got plenty of reps with Ellison sort of sidelined.
He did, but, you know, you're talking about guys ahead of him, Lacoste and Ty and Adams and Ingram. I mean, Ellison's hurt, but you know he's going to be on the 53. So even if they keep four tight ends, and that's a max, how's Thompson cracked the 53? To me, that is a mega, mega battle for him.
I would agree with you. I think that the depth at tight end is extremely strong compared to what we've seen in previous seasons, so that's just going to make it that much more difficult for an undrafted guy.
Remember, Hurstlick's working
around
a tight end, too.
Yeah, so you take all that into consideration. Though, but just to answer the question, I mean, there's been opportunities where Thompson's had the ball thrown at him. He's made plays.
He has.
I think he deserves credit for that, but there's also been Matt Lacoste, who's made plenty of plays, too, and he's another guy in that area of the roster that's also looking to solidify himself.
There's always the practice squad.
Sideline. Yeah, which is a good thing, too, because how many guys have been called up over the last few seasons? You don't want to think that's going to happen, but injuries do happen in the NFL. You need productive players that know the scheme on the practice squad. All right, that is going to wrap up today's program. We want to thank Larry Michael for weighing in, giving us the layout of the land for the Washington Redskins. We're going to be up and running tomorrow. We're going to preview the San Francisco 49ers as we look ahead to the 2017 schedule here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.